All right. Thank you so much for joining me on the Charity Charge Show. Folks, everyone, I'm with Beverly Anderson Hamilton, new friend of mine, long time individual that's been in the nonprofit community. She's currently the interim CEO of 3 Day Startup, a new nonprofit organization that we recently started working.
3 Day
Oh,
Startup is old, actually. They've been
no,
around a
I
long time.
apologize. I was
Oh,
actually
okay.
going to say that you were in that new, you are a new nonprofit that recently joined Charity Charge, but 3 Day
Oh,
Startup
yes, sorry,
has been
yes.
around
New proud customer.
for, thank you, for many, many years. And also what I'm excited to have you on, we're going to talk about 3 Day Startup and sort of some of your experience there. But also you're the co-founder of nonprofit Ombuds, which, you know, when we were chatting on the phone, you were explaining to me, you know, your passion and sort of the need in the nonprofit community for that. So I just
Cool.
appreciate you coming on, and we're gonna have a cool conversation. So
Yeah,
thanks so
happy to be
much.
here. Absolutely.
Take us back. You know, I was pretty blown away. I know I gave a short introduction there, but tell me a little bit about your experience in the nonprofit sector and, you know, kind of how you initially got started and why you were drawn to it, if you would, please.
Sure. So what feels like eons ago, was actually a higher education professional. So really involved working at universities, working with students and faculty, and loved it. And then decided to have a baby who decided he wanted me to stay home with him. So for a number of reasons that I had not anticipated, I became a stay-at-home mom. And the busy bee that I am, railed against that a little bit and was like, what am I going to do during nap times? So in 2013, I actually came across this article about diaper need and diaper banks. And, truth be told, I would not have read that had not I been a new mom back in the day. But, really found myself getting interested about the concept, which is a very lean model to address a very specific issue. The fact that diapers aren't covered under assistance programs, and the fact that, a lot of our kids, and in the Austin area, almost a third of our kids live in poverty, which I think to a lot of us it would be and was very shocking. So because
That's an
they're
incredible statistic, by the way. I
absolutely
mean, a horrible one, but just
a
unbelievable that
horrible
it would be
one.
one third.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, gosh, we have so many great nonprofits here in the Austin area doing great work, but there isn't one that is strategically looking at diaper need, which, according to the numbers, both hard numbers and anecdotal evidence, that there is a ton of need here. So, probably a little naively thought, well, I can do something about that. Not really knowing how much, work and what an endeavor it would turn out to be. But found myself sort of a social entrepreneur and started a 501c3 that is now the Austin Diaper Bank out of my spare bedroom. And
And
so
we've been
for
working with them for a couple of years also at Charity
Yeah, so I
Charge, which
think
is
that's
so
how we
cool.
did initially, cross paths was
Yes.
back in the day.
I actually looked back. So you have a far better memory than I do because I looked and I saw some old, for anyone listening, you know, when I was initially chatting about 3 Day Startup Steeds with Beverly a couple few weeks ago. You had mentioned that, right? And I went back and I saw that we had had some email correspondences way back when actually we started with the consumer card.
Yeah,
So
yes,
you're, yeah, you're on the pulse with what's
yes.
going on in the nonprofit, you know, world. So I appreciate
Yeah.
that. But I think what, I mean, look, what Austin Diaper Bank's doing is incredible. Obviously it's part of the National Diaper Bank Network, right?
Right. So there's a national diaper bank ne network that, helps advocate and provide resources and, do sort of higher level national partnerships, say with Huggies. So if you're a diaper bank of a certain size, then you have access to some of these, big donations of diapers for your community. And so, yeah, shout out to Holly, who is
Yes.
the current ED of Austin Diaper Bank. They continue to do a great job, and they're actually the 1,700 square foot warehouse that we got several years ago, you know, they're now out of room, and so are looking to expand next year. And so that's exciting. If you're looking for a cause to support, go give the diaper bank, you know, some money or donate a box of diapers. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it's important. I want to actually acknowledge that, you know, for anyone listening, if you're in the Austin area, just look up Austin Diaper Bank, amazing organization. You know, Beverly just shared, unfortunately, that a third of children in the Austin area are living in poverty. You know, for so many people listening, I think, you know, I've heard, I don't have children myself yet, but my friends, you know, I'm starting to be around friends that are having children, and they sort of in a, what's the nice word when you sort of complain, but they're just kind of kidding. They're telling me like how much, you know, they need to buy stock and like Pampers and Huggies and all of that. Yeah. 'Cause they're spending so much money.
$1,000 a year.
Sure.
For the amount of time that your kid is in diapers. And that's, you know, you usually, I mean, it depends on the kiddo, but you know, that can be, if your income is at or below the poverty level, I mean, that's a large percentage of your income that you just might not have. And as I said, the assistance programs, just for many reasons, don't cover diapers. And there's only so much leeway the manufacturers give in pricing, right? Even the cheapest diapers are still fairly expensive. So there's just really no way around it. A lot of people talk about cloth diapers are the answer. It's like, well, you got to buy all the cloth diapers. You got to launder all your cloth diapers. Do you have your own washing machine? Probably, you know, possibly not if you're living at or below the poverty level. Also, the labor required, a lot of the moms we were helping have multiple jobs to even try to get, you know, food on the table for their families. So, you know, we would love to not be in business as diaper banks.
Sure.
It's just the reality for the health and well-being of families. It's a need. So
I'm so proud of you for starting that. I think it's incredible. And for people listening, I think that a lot of times people ask me, or I'm just talking about the nonprofit world, giving back, doing good, all of that. This is a super easy way for anyone listening that is a parent or isn't a parent. You know, if you're in the Austin area, you can obviously donate, you know, money, but you can also just drop off, you know, a bundle of diapers to the Austin Diaper Bank. They would gladly accept it. And to your point, there are diaper banks all across the country. So likely, or if you're listening to this, whatever city you're in, you'll have a local diaper bank that you can easily support, you know, and I think it's a very tangible way to give back. Yeah. With that, I sort of actually want to segue, because I always, before I start any of these interviews, I jump on, you know, to reflect back on someone's LinkedIn profile, because that's where I just kind of could see a snapshot. And when I look at it, you know, what pops out to me, which I think might be relevant, a couple of questions I have here, you know, I could see how you started Austin Diaper Bank, and then you were the interim operations director at Con Mi Madre.
Yeah,
then you moved on.
First, I was the interim ED CEO.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
There you go. No. Keep me honest here. And then, but then you were the interim executive director of the Shade Project. Mm-hmm. You were with Impact Melanoma.
Impact Melanoma.
Okay. You're still with.
Fractionally. I'm sort of their research assessment, you know, grant reporting person. It's a cause that is close to my heart. Skin cancer. I've had skin cancer and have to watch and battle against skin cancer. So that's another, it's one of those causes where it's like, people just don't know. It's one of those, if you've had it or you know somebody that has maybe even passed away, it can be very deadly, but it's a very small percentage. But anyway, skin cancer is a cause that, you know, I can continue to help, you know, minimally, sort of in a consulting sort of way. I'm still happy to be with Impact Melanoma.
I love it. I mean, I appreciate that. For me personally, I relate a lot. My father passed away from cancer, not skin cancer, but, you know, any causes that are focused on that, general bucket, I'm really supportive and appreciative of people. What I sort of wanted to ask you is, you know, we're at Charity Charge, we work across the board with tiny nonprofits, like brand new organizations that are even a couple months old, right? Or with organizations that have been around for 100+ years. Sure. You've been in the seat where you've both started a nonprofit. We talked about Austin Diaper Bank, and then you are in and or have been in different roles at different organizations, right? A lot of different organizations. So you've seen a wide kind of breadth of what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, and maybe the most tangible one to this or relatable one to this question, if you reflect back to Austin Diaper Bank or any of these other roles, what are some of like the things that you felt like you did right starting at Austin Diaper Bank to set it up for the success it's having now? What are some of the things maybe you would do differently? So it's a wide open question, but I'm just sort of putting in the perspective of if you were starting a nonprofit, a new one today, what are some of the things you might do from just a baseline perspective to try to guarantee its success? Because I'll tell you, as I go on, I mean, I know how hard it is to start a business, you know, with Charity Charge Social Enterprise and keep that sustainable and going. But here, Austin Diaper Bank's been around for 4+ years. And every year, there are people that are starting nonprofits and 6 months in, they fold, or a year in, or they fold, or 2 years in, they fold. So what are some of those learnings from starting Austin Diaper Bank, perhaps?
Yeah. Man, it is tough. The sort of the tenacity and grit, whatever you would pick, whatever word you like.
I know what you mean.
Really has to be there. And then you have to find other people to help you. Mm-hmm. And I knew that and did that. But at the same time, you know, the diaper bank was very grassroots, which is great, but it also means you are doing a little everywhere. I think depending going forward, if I were to start an organization now, I would have a better, I wouldn't change that, the grassroots aspect, but I would be better positioned now anyway than I was before, because I didn't know nonprofits. I didn't really have the appreciation for how much the board, you know, can propel an organization or mm-hmm. not. And I always had great boards, but they reflected where we were at the time. So we were very working board, like my friends initially, which got us so far. And then we sort of had to evolve and get that next layer. And then, you know, now it's more, I think, of, you know, a governing board, a connecting board, and that sort of thing. And it would be easier for me to start there with a board that was, you know, being more, would be able to accelerate things faster. Now, would that, I don't know, it still could have grown any faster than it did. So it was still exponential growth. I would also really toy with the minimally viable board potentially. Mm-hmm. And looking at different governance models, limitations and limitations.
With that, right? So for someone that's listening to this podcast that, you know, maybe wants to start a nonprofit or is only a couple or a few months in, can you even sort of just explain on a baseline, both sort of your opinion and experience, but also just candidly from a kind of compliance governance perspective,
sure,
the purpose of a board?
Yeah. So your state law is going to dictate, you know, your board requirements, but it's typically you have to have 3 folks on your nonprofit board to serve as the governors and the keepers of the mission, whatever your stated mission is that, you know, you filed with the IRS. To do. So there's sort of state rules and then there's IRS rules, and, you know, they're typically kosher with each other, but, you know, different sources. And, you know, this minimal board of 3 is who says, yes, this is our stated mission. We will, you know, use the funds to the, you know, that are raised to this mission's end, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where you get, you know, your bylaws and all those sorts of things. But then how that board actually, you know, helps the organization meet its mission is very open-ended. They're sort of the best practice, quote unquote, of, you know, they're the stewards and they ensure sustainability and that the organization has resources. But at the end of the day, you know, they hire and supervise an executive director or CEO to do that? Well, then you're relying potentially on people who their full-time jobs are not nonprofit management or whatever the mission is or what have you, but yet they're the overseers and essentially hold the cards. So it's an interesting place to be for an executive director because they often are the experts in nonprofit management in the, you know, fulfilling the mission, yet they're having to potentially take strategic preference or, you know, be supervised by a board that may not have that same knowledge. So it can be, you know, can be awkward, but, you know, when it works well, it works really well. You know, The board gets plugged into how they can best match their skills, what they have to offer with what the organization needs. And then they work to have a strategic plan. And then the executive director uses all their strengths and experiences to execute that plan to the best of their ability with whatever staff and other resources they have at their disposal. So if it works well, it can work well. If it works badly, it works badly. You know, if you have a board that just comes to board meetings and goes, yeah, that looks great. You can have an executive director who maybe isn't taking maybe any board direction, maybe doing, you know, their own thing. The staff could not be aligned with what the org needs. I mean, there's lots of ways you could have dysfunction. So it is tricky. So the minimally viable board can be one in which it's more of a startup mentality where they're sort of there to be advisors and, you know, kind of thought partners, but at the same time, they're not getting potentially bogged down in some of that, you know, administration and over governance and letting sort of the staff and the executive director, you know, run with what they need to. But it just really depends on a lot of different variables to see what of that is going to work.
Have there been any, wow, you put out a lot there, which I really appreciate. Have you found any resources for board training to be helpful? I mean, how does one become a great board member? You know, just in the same way of like, how do you begin?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, we have resources. You know, there's a lot of both websites and nonprofits that their goal is to help nonprofits. So there's Board Source. You know, there's Blue Avocado, there's lots of sources to kind of read about it. So there's sort of the being able to read about it. There's a ton of that. It's the, How do you then, you know, make that actionable with whatever organization you find yourself with? A lot of it comes down to having a good experience, seeing how it can work. So like the board chair, executive director relationship is really important to be on the same page. And what I find hardest is, and why I like being an interim, is that I can be very candid about what I see, because as an interim, you sort of maintain that consultant role. And so then, frankly, you're listened to a little more. Whereas if you're an executive director, over time, I have seen, not so much for me, because the organization I was at the longest was the organization I founded. But, you know, in other organizations, I've seen where the board will tend to not think that the executive director has that because they're not seen as coming from the outside with new information and new expertise, they're often not taken as seriously over time. And it's not a negligent or thing that where they mean to do it. It's just a thing, right? It's maybe a little bit like your mom nagging at you over time. you know,
she doesn't do that. What are you talking about?
Yeah. If it's someone else or like your new teacher for, you know, in a new school year, you're a little bit more like, ooh, but you know, as the school year goes on, you kind of like, well, that's not, you know,
no, absolutely.
It's kind of like that. And so I think it's good, you know, from time to time to have someone outside come in, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money, right? A lot of times nonprofits are so lean, they're not looking to optimize. They're just looking to survive. And so that's a part of the reason that we can get to about nonprofit ombuds. But, you know, I think knowing a consultant or another ED or somebody with a little season who will be help you get some clarity, and also just be honest with you. I have to do this with myself. And I won't share the organization, but you know, over time I've been with different organizations, and I'll check in with my friend who is doing, you know, my colleague who's doing a great job at, you know, X nonprofit. And I'll go, let me ask you something. Cause EDs, we don't have anyone else to talk to. We're all alone over here. We can't really complain to the board. Probably that's fraught, as I've said before. But then, so it's like, we can't necessarily do that with our staff who we're supervising. So it can be a lonely, weird place to be. But so we talk to our other ED friends, and, you know, sometimes I get the, that doesn't make sense. Do you see how, you know, that, and so you can lose perspective when you get in the inertia of your organization. And so having that outside check-in, I think, is really good for all organizations, but they often just can't afford it or know to do it or think of, oh, how could I do that? I'd rather just kind of stay the course and stay status quo.
On that point, I'm just curious, as you're communicating with other EDs, are you doing that? Like, you know, I've collaborated with and think highly of One Voice, for example, in Central Texas.
Yeah.
I see the smile on your face. So that's awesome. Are you a member or was
I was
Austin Diaper Bank, I believe, is right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Diaper Bank, I was with them. I love that group. They focus in particular on health and human services, executive director. So I don't really fit their profile right now, but gosh, yeah, such a great group to just go and have lunch and like chat with someone and be like, oh, what are you, is your board, oof, my staff member this, you know, just like work camaraderie stuff that
I sort of can't saw have. It as like therapy, you know, and really? Which is great, which is, you know, I find that whenever I kind of straddle the line with Charity Charge being a social enterprise, but technically we are we're a corporation. But it's amazing to me the different level that I connect with my peers. I mean, especially like people that are my age and that have started companies. It's like just a different world. And there's stuff that, you know, I share with them that I will not share with anyone else that isn't going through that or hasn't been through that.
No, network's so important. And, you know, also professional development, just learning, you know, from each other,
sure.
Sort of the, you know, therapy aspect, like you said, but that's what, you know, I'm the interim CEO for 3-Day Startup. We do entrepreneurship education in experiential ways. So like,
I want to give a shout out to Bart.
Bart Vaughn.
You know, and I know Houser, Isaac was super involved. Shana. I know the whole, So
great group. But, you know, that's a big part of what makes 3-Day Startup so successful is this network of both emerging, seasoned entrepreneurs and just getting people together to chat about these things that people are loving to do, which is innovation or starting something new or trying to tackle a certain problem. You know, it's getting this like-minded people together on things. So, yeah.
I love it. Can we transition? I want you to talk about, you know, nonprofit ombuds and talk about what you're doing with that, like why you saw the need for it and what you're excited about.
Absolutely. So, you know, ombuds, we know it's a funny word, but in some parts of the world and then in some sectors, ombuds are sort of a natural office or part of an organization. So coming from the university sector, you know, almost all universities have an ombuds. And ombuds are independent, impartial, confidential, place to either air grievances, figure out what the process or policy is for something they feel awkward about or have questions, you know, where they don't want to ask their boss, they don't want to, you know, maybe there's always, right, a power differential or some kind of potential pitfall or fallout from asking questions or frankly leveling concerns that people may have. And we know every workplace has conflict, and it's not that conflict in and of itself it's bad. It's bad when it's misunderstood and or when it tips over to, say, abusive or inappropriate behavior. And as we said before, nonprofits are super lean. None of the nonprofits that I have worked for in the last 7 years have had even an HR person. It's just not something that we can typically justify putting money towards because it's so mission driven. And that is a whole systemic thing in and of itself.
But I see a lot of that. Yeah, yes. I totally get it. I totally get it.
And so we have Nonprofit Ombuds is an answer to a model that works in these other governmental or university sectors to provide a sounding board, you know, all the way up to whistleblower, if needed, outlet for employees that are in the nonprofit sector. So it doesn't matter how small you are, we have a sliding, you know, scale for membership, but if your nonprofit is a member, then we, as your ombud service, are there to, you know, listen and hear your concerns and make recommendations for options based on your handbook or your bylaws or whatever your workplace culture looks like, to then give you some options for how you can resolve whatever conflict you find yourself in, absence of, you know, an HR office, or even if you do have an HR office, that HR office, you know, reports to your executive director. So we know that sometimes you just need somebody who's independent, confidential, impartial. And then as we go on, we will aggregate all of this, mm-hmm. being a researcher, assessment person, we will be aggregating this over time to provide back real-time information to these organizations to say, you know, maybe you didn't know this nonprofit sector in Central Texas, but your sexual harassment issues are on par with the national ones. That's not good, you know? And so we're going to help them, you know, do more proactive planning related to some of these things, but at a minimum, make an attempt and be intentional about providing a more just, a more engaged and more inclusive workplace by being transparent and open and not pretending that these things aren't going on, and to know that people have a place to be heard.
That's awesome. How does the sliding scale work? I mean, so if an organization's listening, first of all, what can you tell us your website,
sure.
how they might get in touch to learn more?
Ombuds. Yeah, it's nonprofitombuds.com, or, you know, we hopefully come up in the Google search. We're getting to SEO and all that business later.
Very important.
Very important. We're also on Facebook and LinkedIn. So awesome. You can find us that way. Also, you can just always, you know, email me at beverly@nonprofitombuds.com. Easy enough.
Awesome.
And it works by budget. So if you're a small nonprofit with a small budget, you're not going to pay as much as a large nonprofit with a large budget. And that membership service allows, you know, any of your employees for a whole year, it's a year membership, you know, have access to us. We help you. We look at your handbook. We look at your policies to make sure that even black and, you know, in your black and white, in your foundational documents, that you're being as proactive as you can be. So do you have a code of conduct? Are you loud and proud about it? Are you forward facing with it, or is it buried in your handbook and people just sort of sign off and you never talk about it again? So there's just different tools, as you know, inclusivity right now is a big thing.
Sure.
But often if we're not proactive about it, then it can't actually then permeate our organization. So we make sure that, you know, all the policies that that folks need, their handbook and all of that. And then also, hey, here's how you talk about your employees about us and our service, and that they all have access to contacting us and that sort of thing. So on top of that, we'll also provide some free webinars, seminars, information about workplace culture, all these sorts of things we're chatting about, you know, overall mental wellness, culture wellness, all of that. And then if it rises to the occasion where people need to go above and beyond that, right, say we provide them options, they're still not, you know, getting anywhere, then organizations and or, you know, employees can come to us and say, I would like to say, you know, open an issue and, mm-hmm. and go further. And then that's just an hourly charge, but still very, very affordable. We're very low lean model, you know, because mm-hmm. it's remote. It's Tara and I. So Tara Levy mm-hmm. is my partner, longtime nonprofit consultant, previously at Mission Capital, does a ton of work in the Austin community. We're the founders, and then we have a cadre of contract ombuds where there's organizations we can't work with, right? So we recuse ourselves if we have close ties or, you know, friendships or what have you. And so we have some contract ombuds that help us fill the gaps there when we need to recuse ourselves.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that this is a super really cool model. And it just makes sense. So mm-hmm. I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing. It's kind of cool too. I mean, it also makes sense, the evolution that you've had from a career standpoint of being in starting nonprofits, being involved in interim roles, being involved as obviously a supporter, volunteer, and then you're kind of taking all of that learnings and insights that you're seeing to be able to apply it in a focused way, but that, you know, can help so many organizations. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, hope so. I mean, I really like to find, or what seems to happen is that I find models that work in other places.
Yes.
Just bring it to Central Texas and go, let's see if this happens.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's right? my number one, you know, kind of entrepreneurship advice to people is you just see like what's working and then you figure out how to tweak it, or yeah. I mean, it's
bring it to a new market, or
exactly.
Yeah,
totally. 100%. No, mm-hmm. I even have some ideas when we stop recording of some collaborations we can do, because, you know, I want to keep figuring out ways to bring as much value as possible to all of our nonprofits. We started really with the consumer card, but our flagship has been the corporate card. But what I want to do at a minimum, I mean, there's different ways to frame it sort of, but for right now, just make sure that like, hey, if you come on board and get the corporate card, your nonprofit then gets access to all of these special benefits, perks as being a member.
Yeah.
So this is something that I would like to be able to offer to our nonprofits, because yeah. they all, or many of them would be able to benefit from it. So mm-hmm. for anyone that missed it, it's www.nonprofitombuds.com. That's mm-hmm. nonprofitombuds.com. And this was really a delightful, you know, episode, Beverly, to have you on with us. I sort of like to end it. Just asking you, it's whatever comes top of mind, but what is your favorite, man? I know you're newer, just getting Charity Charge, but at least what's your sense? I mean, what's your favorite thing about Charity Charge, or what do you think, you know, just about what we're doing in our mission?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, hearkening back to, you know, diaper bank days, and we chatted about this a few weeks ago, was just that, you know, when you start a new nonprofit, or if you're still a new enough organization, you don't have your own, or your organizational doesn't have a credit score. It doesn't have, you know, it can't kind of stand on its own. And so you have to be personally liable for the finances. Right. And that is, you know, is fraught often. And luckily I was in a position to sort of back the organization for a certain amount of time, but, you know, it's important for the organization to be able to grow its own, you know, financial reputation. And so that is what is really helpful to me, because it doesn't matter what, you know, choosing a bank, like all the things you choose as a nonprofit is sort of loaded, you know, because banks are also then potential funders and, mm-hmm. and partners and supporters. So it's like, you know, all of that is tough, whereas this is easy. And it's just nice to have something that is actually easy when you're working in nonprofits. And so I appreciate that as somebody who, you know, when you're a nonprofit ED, you're doing a million different things, you're trying to do them all well. And this is one thing where, you know, it's, you do the application and then it's easy. And so anything like that, I appreciate. And then, you know, now with a 3-day startup, which is a more mature organization than the diaper bank, you know, it's still, you know, just as easy. So even though they have a longer, you know, standing credit and that sort of thing, it's still important to, you know, be able to have an outside option other than, you know, some of these banks and other things that we're also, you know, that we have sort of a partnership or, you know, otherwise sponsorship relationship with, that makes it a little, not confusing, but it just makes it more challenging to navigate. So
thank you.
To just have a singular, you know, a singular goal and then to be able to have it happen easily. So
thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, for people listening, I also want to acknowledge, I mean, I go back to, well, I won't do it by name, but it was a positive thing. In the earlier days of Charity Charge, I remember there was an organization that had only had a debit card from their local bank, and the executive director, they've now been with us for, you know, 2 years or something. And she was like, oh, it sounds awesome. And we really want to open an account. We want to work with Charity Charge. It's going to be great. This and that. And build credit for our organization and all of that. We've never had that. And she goes, but I have one problem. I'm like, okay, what's the problem? And she says, well, the local bank that we have our debit cards with and our deposits with, every year they sponsor our golf tournament. And she's like, I'm really upset. Or she's like, I'm really worried that maybe they'll stop sponsoring. And I'm like, no, like, you're still going to ask them. They're still going to sponsor. You're going to still have your debit cards. You're going to have your deposit relationships. This is just a separate, you know, credit card product that you're going to use to also help, you know, build the organization. And I know that there's reality of like the real world, and there's always, you know, so to speak, compromises, trade-offs that we make in personally, professionally, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I'm really striving always for the spirit of what we're doing, but more so for organizations to have a mentality of abundance, right? Not this fear that I can't make the right financial decision that's in the best interest of our nonprofit, mm-hmm. because I'm worried that maybe that bank will stop like writing us a check. And like, there are, when you include credit unions and local banks, there are literally, absolutely. There's over 10,000 local credit yeah. unions, local banks, and then obviously the behemoths out there. Mm-hmm. I tell nonprofits, I go, do it all, you know, and feel free to put them on the spot. I mean, it would just be deplorable for it happens out there, and it can be a cruel world, but you know, it's just downright illegal for a bank to do like a quid pro quo, which they do engage with nonprofits in that way. So it happens. I'm saying there's trade-offs. That's always hard to be perfect, but mm-hmm. I always tell our organizations, you know, that want to work with us, keep your existing relationships. We encourage that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're still happy to work with you. So yeah. I appreciate what you shared there and giving absolutely. An opportunity to give some feedback. So
yeah.
Again, everyone, I appreciate I've been really fired up to be getting back to doing more and more episodes of the Charity Charge Show. So Beverly, thank you so much. I encourage everyone to check out and support Austin Diaper Bank, 3-day startup, and of course, nonprofit owned buds. Yes. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.